Hello, my name's Rob Seltzer and welcome to Exiled Eagles. Much like Palace's next game, this pod was up in the air until a few minutes ago. So joining me for our festive pod today is Wees man himself, Dale Courty. How are you, Dale?
Actually transitioned to mince pies at the moment, mate, keeping it festive, despite the picture I showed you of the freezer recently.
For anyone who wants to know, he has a massive freezer and there was nothing else in there apart from Wees bars. There was 420 boxes, I believe we counted, of mango Wees bars in there.
And a couple of Magnums as well, just to really...
Oh, and a couple of Magnums, obviously, if he wants to be really fancy on a Friday night. Naked Marky Werner up in Brisbane. I mean, who needs clothes when it's this hot, eh?
That's it, mate. Up in the tropics up here. So I've got me backed out for the boys.
That's it. And what a set of... Thank you very much, sir. And here to offer some parental guidance, childless Ned Rock.
For anyone that's a bit curious on, you know, some parenting tips and stuff, Mark and I have set up a new parenting podcast. So we'll provide details out at a later date.
I mean, I can give people kind of rundown, and basically Ned's views on it are: don't worry what your kid wants, just carry on doing what you want to do. So
question on that. Ned, were you drunk? Because it got very abusive very quickly.
Look, there's a strong possibility that I might have had one or two. Apologies, Salts.
We're brilliant reading.
All right. But honestly, is he actually arguing this with me? I've got two kids, he has none.
I meant to argue an entirely different point, but I sort of got a bit sidetracked.
The title of our podcast is "This is very easy. I don't know what they will complain about." So,
I'll be honest, I've never had any complaints from my kids, so I don't know what you two are complaining about.
Yeah, me either,
mate. Yeah.
Okay. Nor I, because you can't.
Wait till they get a bit older and they complain daily about 700 different things. It's great.
In fairness, he says no to just about everything.
So. You're in that phase.
Wait till he discovers Wees bars.
He found those out when he's about 4 months old.
He had to, Daddy. What's there? Yeah. All right. So let's talk about Palace, I suppose, because who knows if we'll ever see him again. Let's talk about the last few games. Obviously, we were on a massive high after the last pod. I think we just beaten City and our best performance of the season against Wolves. Since then, a couple of injuries, a couple of, let's say, fairly mediocre performances. One against absolute dross Leeds United, let's be honest, Man United. So how are we feeling now? Is this kind of... I'll start with Dale for this one. But so hey, is this the bump? Is this coming back to normality? Is this just a dip in form? Is this where you think we should be? Kind of what you're feeling towards kind of how we've been the last, I'd say, month or so?
Half of the course, really. I think we've played... I think we said it in this pod, actually. We've played well without necessarily creating the chances or there's always been a flaw in our game. And at some stage, it was going to get exposed. And we're not going to win every game. We know that. What was disappointing, if we run through the results, was Burnley 3, Palace 3. Like, score 3 away from home, you want to think you're winning, and especially against Burnley. And I think all the goals were avoidable, apart from Maxwell Cornet, who I think launched a rocket into space with his left foot, which is unreal. The Villa game was infuriating, but I think that was the first game without Jimmy Mack. And you can see there wasn't really... We just didn't have something about us. Second game was Leeds. Mate, it goes either way. Old mate, Eddie Odward, puts that ball in the back of the net. I think I got the right game. Have I got the right game? No.
Leeds has been taking, missed the open goal, but then Rodrigo also missed the back of the net.
It's a different game. And look, again, classic Exiled Eagles. How... Yeah, up at what time? Everyone by yourselves, obviously. Up at what time to watch your game just to see us concede in the 94th minute? Bonza, as the locals would say. United, look, we've been spoiled up there in the last couple of seasons. If you told me pre-season would lose 1-0 to Man United team at Old Trafford containing Cristiano Ronaldo, I'd say, yep, I'll take it. Everton, much better performance, much better win. Don't fall in love with a lone player. And then Southampton. Fuck, we played a lot of games. Southampton, for me, is probably the most infuriating game of the lot because we started well, then disappeared for a whole bunch of time, then finished strongly and didn't even get to witness any niggle between James Ward-Prowse and Wilf, which was really annoying. So all in all, you take those results, probably just say, whatever, we've got bonus wins elsewhere against the likes of City. You probably just want to see us turning a few more of those draws into wins along the way. But ultimately, look, can't grumble. A lot of people would say we should be here, there and everywhere. But, mate, bottom line is we are Crystal Palace. We sit 11th in the table for a reason. I don't want us to be any lower than that and any higher as a bonus.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of good points in there, for sure. I don't think I can disagree with too much on it. So let's go to Arnold Schwarzenegger down there up in Brisbane. What are you feeling?
Much of what Dale said, I agree with. I miss the Southampton game. That's the first game I've ever watched as a mini match on Optus. Because I think it was at a pretty rough time where I'd work and couldn't afford it, so I got home and watched a mini match of that. And I was expecting more from the production point of view. I thought it was pretty poor, to be honest. But 2-2, good to see Jordan back on the score sheet finally after 42, 43 games, whatever it was. But yeah, I mean, 2 minutes in, Wolf scores, we're flying. Thought, here we go. Awesome. And then... just wheels fell off for a good chunk, let him back in. And then, you know, kind of 2-2. After 2 minutes, you're not taking 2-2 or a draw. The Everton game, it was good to see us. I think that was important to bounce back after Man U. I put on the WhatsApp group early doors when Man U weren't going well that I was really looking forward to the game. They got into a little bit of form and I wasn't so much when it came around. 75 minutes in, I thought, we could nick this. Again, Ayu, you know, misses a sitter there. If he puts that in, that's a different game. And then,
just on this, he missed a sitter. He's basically put a ball back across the face of goal and there's no one there to knock it in.
I mean, ifs and buts.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you can argue he missed a sitter. I wouldn't call it a sitter, but...
Well, for a dude of his calibre and 40-odd games at point that point, he should have been fucking chalking something up, mate.
And I've seen Rob Seltzer miss those, so it can't have been that easy.
Mate, there's...
If
we look around a number of teams in the league, that ball goes back across the face of the box and there's a poach. There's like a fox in the box who puts it away. Can we create? I can't remember who was on at the time, if it was Edouard or Benteke. Can we criticise one of them for not being in that position? I would think, I'm not just defending Jordan Ayew because obviously we eat fufu and that sort of business together, but everyone's looking very blankly. Fufu is a Ghanaian dish. It's just, I feel sometimes he gets rough justice when that could easily have been a. You know, if that was United, Ronaldo scores from the tap in the middle of the box. Just saying.
Oh, well, how unlike you to come to the defence of the Ghanaian prince. But anyway.
Oh, this is true, mate. This is true.
He scores that. It's a different game. I mean, you can go back to all those games, though. Everyone had chances. I'd Will for various ones. It's hard for me to recollect. I haven't potted in an eternity. But, the heat was on him. It was... becoming more mentioned as the weeks went on. He was getting chances, not taking them. You know, couldn't hit a fucking barn door there for a while. So, look, I like the guy's work ethic. Is phenomenal. I was very, very happy for him to get back on the score sheet in the Southampton game. And, you know, long may that continue. I hope he lights up and brings it home. I've never thought he's not worth the trundle in, you know. I know prior to Man U, Ned was saying, look, people were saying, leave him out or whatever. I think he's integral to have in a game like that because he's just going to bust a lung all day long, do all the dirty work, He's got a face of thunder the whole time doing it. I just wish he'd fucking finish would pick up a little bit, that's all.
Yeah, look, we'll definitely speak more about him a bit later on, because there's a couple
Yeah, sure.
I definitely think there's very, very valid points you made there. And like, I know Dale's dead keen to talk about him and how he's our best player and he's better than Wilf and all this type of stuff. So before we get to that, let's go to Super Nanny and hear about what he thinks of the last month or so.
I think firstly, I think Mark's just about tried to throw me under the bus there to say I was criticising IU, but which I don't recall. Probably happened, but I don't recall it.
I'm drunk again.
Yeah, it's also possible. That doesn't sound like me, Mark. I don't drink, mate. Completely teetotal. As Dave was saying, we played a lot of games. It's just sort of come back down to, you know, where I think we had a lot of games at the start of the season where we sort of came away and the results we had, you go, geez, we're unlucky. We could have got a bit more out of that. And probably consider have continued that a little bit. I think that we just sort of we're into that sort of stage of the season where the squad depth needs to be shown, and we all thought that we had a little bit more squad depth, but I think perhaps our squad depth might be in positions that aren't necessarily going to influence games from a goal scoring perspective. I think we've probably got a lot of depth in that sort of holding midfield. It's a lovely little background just popped up there, Rob.
Found it.
But I think we've got that depth in terms of to be able to sort of sit and hold and do those sorts of things that we used to do back in the day under old mate that we don't talk about anymore. But in terms of do we have someone to replace a Jimmy Mac from an energy perspective who can give a bit of output going forward? Maybe not. Although having said that, Will Hughes, now that he has made a huge difference with the couple of starts that he's now had. I think we all spoke about it earlier in the season that he was probably earmarked as that long-term replacement for Jimmy Mack. And I think we've sort of seen that, and the upturn in form did sort of coincide with when he got to come in and have a go at that role. So maybe that's where that depth comes in. But I think without that type of character, if we take out one, be it a Jimmy Mack or, you know, or a Conor Gallagher, or, you know, hopefully now Will Hughes can add himself to that to that bracket. If we don't have two of those in the side, something becomes a little bit more challenging. But got a couple of results, you know, obviously a great result against Everton, a couple of other ones that sort of not so much, but, you know, it was going to happen that way, and we're still sitting in a very, very comfortable position at this time of the season, so no complaints.
Absolutely. I think for me, kind of one of the most disappointing part of it is that, as Ned, you alluded to at the start, we started the season and playing very well. Like, we should have, we snatched draws from the jaws of victory at times, Arsenal, Brighton, etc. But we're always at this consistent level of playing well. And I think the disappointment was when we've come to this patch where we're playing a Leeds United team that aren't great, you know, a Man U team that weren't in great form. Okay, yes, the new manager bounce, et cetera. Okay, Everton, we beat a Southampton team who aren't great. Like, we kind of, our performance level dropped. And I feel that if we've been playing at that at the level we were before, and we'll come to kind of the reasons why that might be in just a second, but I feel like if we were at the level from the start of the season against your Cities, against, even though we lost to Liverpool, against your Arsenals and your Spurses, again, in the last four games, we'd beat them, I would think. I mean, just the way we play, because we just, and yes, there's reasons, and Mac is a big reason, and as I said, we will come to that in just a second. But for me, I just think the midfield, we've lost the midfield in too many games. So I like Jesh Lup, I would like what he brings, but I just don't think he works in a central midfielder with what Patrick Vieira wants to do. I just don't think he's good enough on the ball and calm enough on the ball. Look at what Will Hughes bought compared to Jesh Lup. Kouyaté can't do that. He just goes and breaks up play. So I just feel like we wasted the Leeds game by playing. I think Schlupp played all 90. If he didn't, he came off with about 10 to go for Hughes. Again, then he started him again against United. Now, this is not for me to say I know more about midfield play than Patrick Vieira, Christ no, but I just feel like that was a bit of a wasted opportunity. Hughes starts to get Everton. We were a lot better there. We win. And I just think we were knackered. We looked tired against Southampton at times. Just two games in 4 days with the same team out there, a player in Hughes that hasn't played all season. And I think it's caught up with us. And I was delighted to come out with a point at the end of it, if I'm going to be honest with you. But I think that kind of leads us nicely onto, and I'll kind of go in reverse order now. So we'll kind of go back to Ned. So obviously the big miss so far of all those period of games has been Mecca, but also obviously Joachim Andersen's been out. So, and we've briefly touched on the fact that our squad is absolutely a hell of a lot better, but it's still a little bit thin in places. I think Tompkins has come in rusty first game and has grown into it, but he obviously doesn't have the range of passing as Andersen. So do you feel like with Mecca out and in with Andersen out, do we have the squad to carry on playing Vieira ball at the level, or do we have to try and look at different ways of doing it? Do we put too much emphasis on having certain players that can do certain things in certain positions? Go on.
I think that last point is probably just about spot on. I think it's very much a case of, do we have a depth of squad of players that can play and be competitive at a decent level in the Premier League? Yes, we do. Do we have a squad that can play a dominant style of football where we possess the ball and we outplay our opponents when we're missing a couple of key players? No, we probably don't. I think you can sort of see, I think Tompkins was one. Having said that, I think it was the Everton game maybe. He actually had a really good game playing out from the back. But there are times that you can see he's making that deliberate effort to play out from the back as he's been instructed to, but you can see that he just wants to send it long and get rid of it. Because, you know, that's the type of defender that he is. And there's nothing wrong with that type of defender. It's just that's not the way we're trying to play. And so when you put him in a partnership with Mark Gay, you sort of end up with this mismatch of Tompkins wanting to be knowing that he should be the leader in that partnership, but Gahey knowing that he is the one that is probably more experienced at playing that type of football. So you sort of end up with this mismatched centre-back pairing of, who is your primary centre-back and who is your secondary centre-back. So you get those sorts of things. And if you can't play out from the back, then it does make it a little bit more challenging as you go. Having said that, I think potentially the Southampton game, there was a few criticisms out there about obviously with Jack Butland coming in and how he was playing it a lot longer a lot. I think it's possible that that was probably a deliberate play once Butland was in, with the fact that he's obviously got much bigger, better kick than Guaita. So we probably did go a little bit more direct in that game because we knew that Southampton would press, there'd be space in behind and we could just try and pop that over the top and release your IUs, your Wilfs, and that would have been why Edouard would have played ahead of Benteke. So I think it's good that we have those options to adapt. I just think that potentially it would be good if we, had those players that we could, if it was, if you lose an Andersen, all of a sudden playing out from the back is just so much harder. And you lose a Mecca, all of a sudden playing through that midfield is so much harder. It'd be good if we had a little bit more depth to continue our style of play, because I don't think it doesn't look like we spend a lot of time working on doing things differently to that.
Yep. Anyway, what do you think, Mike?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's kind of on paper, you go, okay, cool. Look, we've got squad depth, for us, for Palestine, you've got the likes of Tompkins coming in for Andersen, which is great. But then those components, the incomings for injured players, aren't necessarily used to the same dynamic or what Patrick's been running this season. So, yeah, it's kind of funny how, Tompkins coming in, great, no drama, good, solid centre bank. Bang one in the other day, but then you've got, I don't want to say square peg around hole, but like sort of a bit of new and the old, like a bit of sort of Roy Ball mentality mixed in with Big Pat's notions of how it should be played. So whilst they looked apart, they're kind of running different races, and that's kind. I mean, I don't know. I think, like you said, Rob, James is betting in a lot better as the games go on. So his first one didn't look too crash hot, but last one against Southampton, he's looking, getting used to life a bit more with his new set of back pairing. And also with Hughes, they seem to be going from strength to strength the more minutes he's getting, which can only lead you to think that he must have had an injury or there was something going on that we weren't privy to as to why he didn't get a start much earlier, because everyone was screaming out for it. And it seemed a very obvious thing to do, but he was held back for whatever reason. And you know, the few minutes initially, and then, you know, the full 90 on or got subbed off at 90th minute or whatever. But looking apart, very exciting to see him and what he can bring to the table in place of Jimmy Mack, who, let's face it, isn't going to be there forever. Coming back from injury now, 34, that's not ideal from a long-term injury. Is this season his last? We don't know, but certainly promising signs from Hughes coming in. That little pirouette he had in traffic there, that was great. Really looked the part. So he's got some quality. I think it was yourself or Dale that's got a Watford mate that said, you know, he's good to go. So looking forward to that coming through. But yeah, I think it's a little bit of a patchwork quilt in the middle at the moment with the injuries and then sort of new and the old sort of put in the mixer and, you know, trying to go forward with the new PV ethos. It might just be some lackluster draws and a cheeky sort of 1-0 loss or a 1-0 win. But anyway, onwards we march. So could be worse, could be a lot worse.
Yeah, I mean, that pirouette reminded me of me against Sunderland supporters for CBS. It was majestic, as I thought.
We had the wind to your back as well, so that helped.
And then it was just so calm, just like me on the ball. Like,
I'll be honest, you doing a pirouette, Rob, I'm picturing, I can't remember, there was a wonderful bit of footage from a bloke from the non-league game who does, sort of just kicks a ball in front of him and just does a spin. Doesn't actually
touch
it.
Gallagher's brother.
Yeah, Gallagher's brother.
That's why he did the celebration.
Yeah. So that's how I would picture you doing a pirouette on the football pitch.
That's slanderous. So let's move on very quickly before we take full offence to that. Dale, what are your thoughts on, you know, Anderson, Maka? I mean, are they vital cogs? Can we replace them?
I think the harsh reality is we've got an 11, maybe 13, 14 now. We haven't been in a situation where let me rephrase that. We are not a big club with a squad of 20 quality players who you can just rotate in and out. So when you do have an injury to like a Jimmy Mack, it means that whoever's coming in to replace him is highly unlikely to have played much football, if any. And that just means that you're going to be in a situation where you're not as good, that your team's going to suffer, right? Unless that person comes in and just has worldie after worldie, you're going to suffer. It's the same at the back. It's the same if you're if Joachim Anderson or Gehi gets injured, right? Whoever came in to replace them wasn't going to replace any football, right? Bar the first game of the season, it's been Gehi and Anderson. So we're probably now in a better position for having injuries in the future because those players have got some minutes under their belt. Because the reality is, apart from up front, where it's been a combination of Wilf and two others, they have switched in and out, whether it be Elise, Ayew, Benteke, Edouard, and at the back, like nothing else changes, right? We don't change anything. So it's not a surprise to see us lose those players and for it to be a vital cog. The reality is, I think we could have lost anyone from the middle of the park except, I shouldn't say this is bad, but except maybe Luka, and you'd have gone, oh, crikey, this is a real gaping hole now. And as Mark said, there obviously was a reason why Will Hughes wasn't playing. We know he was injured for a little part of it, but obviously he didn't feel he was quite up to speed and whatever else. So I think you've got to just expect, again, we're Crystal Palace. We are a middle-of-the-table team. We are who we are. You don't expect us to lose players and it be a seamless transition. Because if there is, that probably goes back to, I think, what Ned was saying. That's when you switch back to a Roy Hodgson style of football. And it's basically, all we're going to do is sit back and absorb all the pressure. And you know what? Anyone can probably come into that system because you don't have to worry about the other side of the game, which is very different to PB. So, yeah, that's my read. Did I answer the question? Probably not.
Yeah, I think you all didn't in a way, and it was good. For me, a couple of things. For me, before Will Hughes came in, it showed us why the starters are the starters and why the backups are the backups. So it shows why Anderson starts over Tompkins. I know, obviously, he's a very good player, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, the way he can ping a 30-yard diagonal onto Tyreek Mitchell's foot. So he would have been perfect against Southampton and Leeds. They were pressing high. One ball, get Tyreek Mitchell going down the wing, one ball over the top, and he'd have taken out four or five of their players comfortably. Everton didn't press us. So it just kind of shows why the starters are the starters and why someone like a James Tompkins is a backup. Hughes, I think, is going to come, has looked great, and I think he's going to continue to go strength to strength. He looks a right, ready-made Maka replacement. The other thing, and the flip side of this for me, is a positive, is that we lost Anderson and MacArthur and kind of, you know, messed around a little bit with the midfield, as I my personal opinion, got it. Like, we got it a little bit wrong. But we didn't just revert to type of give it to Wilf and see what he can do. We still tried to play this football. And we'll come onto this right now, I think. And Jordan Ayew has been spectacular doing it. He's carried the ball well. Yes, Dale. I always say he played incredibly well. But like, he's won fouls against Leeds. He had that guy on toast the whole game who was marking him. Against United, he was great. Against Everton, he was great. I think he ran out of steam a little bit against Southampton, but I mean, the geezer's put in a tremendous amount of work. So let's talk about Jordan Ayew. Yes, he has his faults, absolutely. And I think going forward, I mean, against someone like a Norwich, I don't want to see Jordan Ayew play. I want Michael Olise to start against Norwich, for example, or a team in the bottom four or five that we're going to have a lot more of the ball and just be at them all day long. I'd want to see Olise play against United, against City, against Arsenal, against those teams. Absolutely, yeah, he plays for the way he, for what he does, the work off the ball. So I'm going to come to Marky Mark first because he hasn't been first off the blocks. I mean, Jordan Ayew, does his positives outweigh the negatives for you?
I think so. You just mentioned you wouldn't have him in the Norwich game, but given all the opponents across the board in the league this year, I'd sooner have him than not. He evidently has a tremendous work ethic. Managers love him. I think it's been mentioned on another pod, but he's obviously very endearing on the training track. And just bust the gut, you know. You can't tell the constant look on his face, which amuses me, that he's, you know, like he's been shot or he's, you know, absolutely pulling teeth and he'd rather be anywhere else in the world. But that's good. That's a guy that's, you know, never happy until he's absolutely, you know, got it on a string and doing the business. The West Ham goal, you know, like, I think it might have got a smile out of him then. So he's industrious, he's hardworking. You know, he never stops running. Good for, you know, drawing a foul, holding up the ball, just some dirty, shitty stuff that no one really wants to do or think they're too good to do. Jordan will do that in spades and will do it for you all day long. Totally agree, you know, like coming into the Man U game and stuff like that, all day long. But I also agree with, you know, what you just said with, you know, coming up with someone like Norwich or whatever, yeah, bang him out, mate, and get an Olise or someone like that in there. But, you know, as we said, even last season or season before, for what he costs and what he brings to the table, he's just a free hit, mate. You know, really, what was it, $2 million or something? So nothing. Not on high wages. And, yeah, never complained. You never see him giving anyone a mouthful. He gets on with it. His finish, you know, hasn't been great. But, I mean, let's face it, he's not there with expectancy to bang in 10 or 15 goals a season. That's not why he's there. He's more than welcome to, but, you know, he's not been held accountable for that. So, yeah, let's jag another couple by season. Then it'd be good. I really think the goal in his last game will give him that bit of confidence in the final third to, you know, pull the trigger and pull it well and start getting a few more stats. But for me, on the bulk of it, by and large, yeah, he's in my 11.
Right, I'll go on over to you for your Ghanaian prince.
I've got nothing to say. I've said it in the previous pods. The guy works his absolute nuts off. And if we've got this into our heads that he's a goal scorer, because he had that one season where he scored 9, his previous best, we've got it up here, his previous best season was 12 in 2014.
Yeah, was it Marseille 15. Or Lorient?
That was Lorient.
Yeah.
You know, apart from that, you're looking at 7 as the most. Like, you know, I think we need to get it out of our heads that this guy's our goal scorer. If he chips in with five goals in a season, magnificent. He works his absolute nuts off for us. He does stuff that other players will not do. Not that they don't do, will not do.
Correct.
And sometimes, I know you said you don't want him against the likes of Norwich and everywhere else, but do you know what? I think you're going to need him against a team like Norwich because at least for 65 minutes, he helps us keep it tight. We're not going to win that Norwich game 4-5-0 because we're just not, all right? And if we might need somebody who's going to help a defensive end as well as run a team ragged and tire out a fullback for when we want to bring on Elise, or we want to bring on Edouard on the wing, or whoever it is, Eze, then he's the man for the job. I'm not just defending him because he's Ghanaian and my dad's from Ghana. I'm defending him because I actually think he's really vital to our team. My mate's a Liverpool fan, my best mate, who the wedding I flew back to. And he keeps texting me, going on about, what the fuck were you playing Jordan Ayew for? He's awful. But I'm like, mate, you don't watch Palace games enough to realise that he actually does the shit that we need to be a good team. And, you know, if you have 11 Jordan Ayews, you're not going to win the league, but you're sure as hell not going to get relegated. So just be thankful that we've got one who does, as Mark said, he does jobs others don't want to do, and he does it without complaining. Yes, he does it without a smile, but hey-ho. and our best performance of the season certainly came with him in the team.
Paul, Ned, your thoughts? Same as Dale.
Very similar to Dale. I think in terms of Ayew and falls into a similar category from I think where we have a few. There's a few Palace fans out there and non-Palace fans who just get a little bit lazy with their analysis of players because they watch the highlights and they see Jordan Ayew miss a sitter. I think Benteke is in that same bracket, not obviously for different reasons, but it's a case of they'll watch the highlights, they'll see a miss a sitter and go, right, they're shit, they offer nothing. And it's just not true. Jordan Ayew is absolutely, the way that Vieira wants us to play, he is absolutely integral to that side. It's been spoken about already, but there is no one else on our team who will press like Jordan Ayew. Even when we were playing under Roy, there was no one who would press like Jordan Ayew. If you looked at the pressures, it was ridiculous. He was like double everyone else. And I haven't looked at the stats this year, but I assume that wouldn't have changed a whole lot. He will chase down every single lost ball. He will do all of that work. Does he miss a sitter? Yes. But if he did all that work and didn't miss a sitter, I can tell you he wouldn't be playing for us. If he had that final product and that work rate, I mean, he's definitely, I mean, the only player that sort of even comes close to that we've got was, you know, then you're looking at someone like a Conor Gallagher, who's got the work rate and an end product. But that's why he is contracted to one of the biggest clubs in the world and not available for £2.5 million to Crystal Palace. So I just think, yeah, he's one of those players. He's absolutely integral. And I think, as Dale said, if we're playing Norwich, he's going to be the one that's going to win us that ball. You look at the likes of your Eze's, your Elise's and so on, phenomenal on the ball, absolutely phenomenal on the ball. But if we want to play this high energy, you know, chase hard, win it back type game, well, those players aren't doing that. You know, I think Elise, when he's come off the bench, has been superb. The start, the one or two starts that he's got, you know, he doesn't do that press. He doesn't sort of really put in that work. Whereas if you bring him on against an opposition that's already tired, he's fantastic because then he can just do his skills. So I think in terms of someone like an IU, he is the one that you've got to start with. I think it doesn't matter who, really matters who you play. He's the one that's going to wear the opposition out. And then you can then once they're all tired, then you can bring on the players who are going to be able to finish the game off.
Yeah. There's no surprise against Everton, Southampton, he got the goal and was brought off straight away because the guy had run his nuts off. He'd done, and it obviously, yeah, it was pre-planned. It was completely pre-planned, yeah, that now's the time when we bring on... Rob, you're a rugby fan, right? Mm-hmm. Kiwis have said it for years. You have your finishers, right? Yeah. And IU's not a finisher. There might be games he plays 90, but Elise, like we saw against City, is a finisher. At the moment, he's a finisher. Other players in our team, you bring him on towards the end purely because they're going to finish it because the others have done the donkey work up front. So,
yeah, I was just going to make a very similar point in terms of, you know, football matches 90 minutes, and it's not about going out there scoring in the, you know, we used to be about maybe go out score in the first minute, park the bus for 85, or just park the bus for 90 and hope we get lucky at the other end. But it's a case of, you know, our game plan now is press hard, wear the other team out, and then try and score goals late. Unfortunately, we've had a few where potentially the fitness isn't quite there and we've worn ourselves out and caught goals at the other end. But that's the game plan. You know, I don't think Patrick Vieira goes into games when it gets to halftime and we're 1-0 up or 1-0 down. I don't think he sits there and goes, oh, well, this is all going terribly. You know, we have to change everything at halftime. I think he sits there and goes, this is all part of that. And we get to that final half hour. And like we did against the Spurs, for example, that's when we just come in, or even in Everton, that's when we come in and go, right, this is the time now that we can try and close it off. So I think, yeah, I is integral to that first part of the game. If he gets some goals, starts getting some goals, great. If he doesn't, not the end of the world.
I agree with everything you say to a point, right? He's been playing superbly well. If you ask me our best player the last four games, it's been him by country mile. With regards to your pressures, Ned, and this is quite sad to me, but there's a Twitter account called The Other 14 that they just basically take out the top six because they don't care. And they kind of show what the other 14 are doing. And pressures, Wilf has been more than once been top of the whole of all of it for the other 14 for pressures. So absolutely IU does that. So for me, the big thing that I suppose the big drawback is not just the lack of goals. I don't mean it's a lack of any goal. The Southampton game with his first assist and goal of the season, I think. I might be wrong there. So the problem you've got for me is where he plays. So everything he does, what Dale very rightly said, he puts in, he does the work that other people won't do. He puts in, he'll chase back. I mean, was it Everton? Was it Southampton where he basically chased back from the... he had the ball in the corner and then chased the bloke back right across the field diagonally and won, yes, the ball.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about, right? Not many players do that. And that's brilliant. I mean, Arsenal, when Edouard scored, he wins, or was it Edouard scored the goal that way? When he won the tackle, when it went to Gallagher and he gave it to Edouard or whatever it was. That first goal at Arsenal, it was in Jordan Ayew tackle where Partey pretended to be injured. He does that superbly. But by playing him currently in one of the front three, it feels like he does everything apart from what an attacker needs to do, which is score goals and great assists. So
none of our attackers do that.
Oh, no, but like, he doesn't. It's shown that we're 10, 11, however many games into the season, and that was his first goal and first assist of the season.
Mate, and
week in, week out.
If we are, okay, so the other people who would play in that position. So Edouard's played in that position this season. Edouard scored four goals. Two of them were against Tottenham, who were shy, and he did that through the middle.
Yeah.
Did it through the middle. You know, Elise's had, one goal, one assist, and I appreciate he predominantly came off the bench. sometimes you have to look beyond. I mean, basketball is a classic example of this, right? Advanced metrics. You can look at advanced metrics and go, somebody looks like they're doing really well, but the reality is, or doing okay. But you look at it, and they might be the pass before the pass. They might be the person who makes the cover tackle or wins whatever. I just think we are a better. You can't deny it. We are a better side of IU. Our results at the start of the season, past the Chelsea game and the Liverpool game, were good. He was playing, and his performances when things have been tough, you've said it yourself, has been our best player. So
he's been brilliant.
So he's popular.
At the moment, at the moment, I can't argue that. At the moment,
but for me, if you think about it, he's probably Guaita. I don't think they ever sit there and go, "Oh, crikey, we can't play Jordan this week." Oh, I reckon he's one of the like. I literally think they go, right, here is the 11 again, and it's like, and then it might be so and so is injured. We'll tweak that, but. I cannot see how they go, yeah, he's shit for us. I'm not trying to defend him. I'm not trying to defend him. But seriously, like even you've just said it.
I'm not saying he's shit for us. I'm not saying he's shit for us. Yeah.
It's just funny. Can we turn around and go, oh, that hasn't scored enough goals and get enough assists?
For an attacking player. I appreciate what you're saying and I get it. I really get it. But then I'll put it to you. If you've got a front three, and one of them has had one assist and one goal in 13 or four, whatever, how many league games, would you think, shit, I really want to play him week in, week out?
I would ask what the results were in those games.
I wasn't asking you that.
Because at the end of the day, the important thing is your team scoring enough goals to win games? And if your team is performing to the level that you want, then I don't really care who's putting the ball in the back of the net. It could be this. I mean, you look at Chelsea, half their goals have come from their defenders.
Yeah.
I don't think Thomas Tuchel's turning around and going, well, you know, the defenders, you know, the people
on Chelsea, they're playing a different. Well, they have to because they've got a million injuries. But one week it's Werner, one week it's Pulisic, one week it's Havertz, one week, like they mix it all around all the time.
Sure. So, on a, just going back to that pressures point, by the way, so I've looked it up. I think the difference with IU's pressures that I've just had a look at it here. So, IU. So Zaha has more pressures and there's other players that have more pressures. But if you look sort of at the per 90, but in the attacking third, so he's the one that will chase down that ball and put pressure on the opposition defenders. And if you look at those stats, the only one, so I think Edouard has got more per 90 than him and Mateta, but I'm not going to count that because he's played about 3 minutes. So that doesn't really count. But then it's Jordan Ayew and he's comfortably ahead of Wilf.
We need James Howland here right now because I'm trying to find it. And
I've got a very good site though. What are you looking for?
How many penalties has Wilf scored this season?
Two or three.
So let's say the guy scored He's got five goals this season and one assist. And if he's got three penalties, that's two goals and one assist and open play for the person who is arguably our best player. Right? Yeah, no?
Best and most hated.
Good omen.
Yeah, so take the penalties out of it because the penalties are, you know, anyone can score the penalty if you get a chance to take them. Is Will's production good enough this season?
Probably not. I mean, he's probably one.
So why aren't we having the same conversation about
Wolf? Wolf hasn't played well.
He's not the run sheet.
The last three or four.
All right. Okay, this is a question.
My last question about it. I said, I'll hold my hands up and say he's been fantastic last few games. And does he deserve to go? No. But do I think there's games you can pick and choose him? Yes. That's kind of how I see it. That's just my personal point of view. Now, question, Dale, as an ex-salesperson. You have a salesperson who is brilliant at opening on a cold call, fantastic about getting pain out, and fantastic about doing like the sell, but cannot close for shit. Do you keep them as a salesperson?
Send them in as part of a team with a closer.
The other dial.
So
that, that's kind of that's how I see Jordan Ayew in that. He does everything else apart from the main part of being a forward player. Does everything else brilliantly, but that one little bit. So if you've got a salesperson, they can cold call for everyone, get the pain out, get them all excited. When it comes to actually getting them to buy, cannot do it or gets one very rarely.
What you want me to say is you need to get someone in who can do a whole lot. But the fact of the matter is we just spent 20-odd million on somebody who's meant to be able to put the ball in the back of the net and they're not necessarily doing it with the regularity that you would have hoped. If we want to get the player who can do everything in that position, we're going to be spending 40, 50 million, which we don't have. And sometimes you have to make a compromise of what's best for our team. Well, here is salesperson A, who is going to bring a lot of stuff to our team that other people can close on. Done deal. Like sometimes you just have to look at it that way. We haven't... Yeah. When the only one you will say is that when and if Eze is ready to go, the argument is Eze goes in for him because he's a player of the year. We saw what he can do playing in a similar-ish position, albeit off the left. You might say, you bring him in. And I don't think anyone would be upset about that. But at the same token, if we then start seeing Joel Ward getting hung out to dry because he hasn't got right back, a right midfielder or a right forward coming back and helping him out, we can't complain because before we had that with IU. So you might want to, we can swap him out, but there's going to be a sacrifice we have to make for that.
I accept all the points made there.
Excellent. Move on.
My personal opinion is he starts in some, he doesn't in others. All right. Can he be asked to be talk about behind closed door football? Because I can't, to be honest with you. Who gives a shit? It's rubbish.
I'll just say this. They're doing it in Wales. They're doing it in Scotland. They're doing it in the A-League.
They should have done it on the A-League on Saturday. What about to go to the Mariners?
Okay, we're not going to start that again. The harsh reality is, having been to the UK, it's too fucking late, mate. The horse has bolted. And what are the government going to say and implement where people are actually going to listen to now? Because it's just a farce over there and they're led by an absolute clown.
Absolutely. Yeah.
On that here, Raw have had their game from weekend just gone postponed with Perth. FFA Cup game tonight with Sydney postponed, as is our forthcoming game this weekend against Melbourne City. Also postponed, but the women get to play on. So make of that what you will.
When did the Brisbane game tonight get postponed? That was on as of this afternoon.
Not on now, champ.
Yeah, no, fair enough. That must have been a real last minute.
It's just interesting that we. I don't want to get into a whole COVID skeptic kind of thing because it is real, it is a thing, we do need to be careful, et cetera, et cetera.
But Dale doesn't want you to get vaccinated and he thinks...
mate, I'm triple vaxxed myself, mate, so... triple vaxxed. I'm that old, mate, I'm triple vaxxed. it's just interesting how we will tell people all over the world, you know, don't do this, don't do that, be careful, but hey, 50,000 of you can go and watch your football team and stand shoulder to shoulder. Game against Southampton, it panned across the Holmesdale at one stage. And it was quite refreshing to see a number of people in masks, at the very least in masks. But it's a super spreader event, regardless of what we say.
I thought as well on that, sorry to cut you off, a friend of ours, her sister's doing like the research to how it spreads. She's in the thing. It's just stadiums are one of the safest places to be because of the amount of airflow going through it. It's so open. Although you're close to people, I mean, they breathe out and they're straight, it's just gone. Like it might. So where you get it worse, so the concourses are the problem because it's kind of more enclosed. And if you're in a room with air conditioning and stuff, that's the worst, which is why flights are so bad and stuff. So actually, she's like, she doesn't know anyone. Okay, in Australia, probably a bit different because they don't often fill stadiums here, but they actually haven't had that many people.
Finley Vale's swipe at Australian sport, isn't it?
True, isn't it? I mean, there's 4,000. There's 4,000 the Mariners on Saturday. Just say 4,000 people.
Did you have a look? Did you have a look at the video from the game I was at, Rob? We weren't a whole lot of spare seats in that one.
Like she said, like she hasn't had many people that actually got caught it at a stadium because of how open the airflow is.
But then, mate, but then you look at the stats that came out from the Euros, and they spoke about all the increased transmission that happened. It's not just being at the game; it's the pre-game drinking,
it's getting the whole process, the transport on the way there.
Yeah. Well,
buses, trains.
It's old mate who stood in Trafalgar Square with a flare in his ass.
Good old fun. That's just Tuesday. Yeah. You can come up to Saratoga, and it's someone doing that, different person every Tuesday night in the shops. What of it? Not a big deal.
Talking about Australian football crowds, when I posted that photo, I think it was on Valentine's Day this year, at an A-League, bona fide A-League game at Dolphins Stadium. And Dale, what do you think of that fucking five-a-side or something?
Oh, mate, I thought you'd just gone to watch like a park football match or something.
Some of the country's finest, my friend.
Let's touch on it briefly then, because I didn't put it in the run sheet and I thought I'd throw it at you. January window coming up. Do you think we need anyone, and what would you like to see, if anything, anyone come in? Go. Sure. Anyone just start firing shit out.
I'm not really giving this any serious thought at all, other than I'm happy that Gallagher can't be recalled. I've read of that. But yeah, I haven't really got my eye on the prize on anyone in particular who I'd like to see come in. You always want to see those sheets. You know, who's available and stuff like that. Sorry, Rob.
Would you like to see any position strengthen?
Maybe a bit more in midfield. I think Luke is pretty cooked. Macca's aging and coming back from injury. So you go, okay, well, here's, well, then who's in place of that again? So possibly something there. It's probably midfield for the minute. Pains me to say it, but probably going to have to address right back at some point.
And left back, mate. We've got no left cover.
Left back was what I was going to say.
True.
Nathan Ferguson's is training with the 23s, and I think Vieira said he has to play 60 minutes of the 23s before he can be considered for the first team bench. So that's great. We have to hold some hope that A, he's a real person, and B, that he's a real person who can play football at right back, right? So let's hope that comes true. But as it currently stands, we have no cover in our fullback positions. Tyreek Mitchell has done very well, and he's young, but could do a rest. Otherwise, he gets injured, and then what? And Joel Ward is, 32 or whatever he is. And again, just the rigours of having to play every week. And he has been playing very well.
Klein covers.
We've got Klein.
But the reality is, Klein, he literally is just a backup, because if he was good enough, he would have pushed Joel Ward out in a couple of games. Like he is, but at least he's a
competent backup. He played that game while Ward was suspended, and we didn't fall apart.
I'm not going to deny that. I do wonder when his contract expires, though, because he signed a new one in January last year.
I think it's end of season. I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Like an 18 month.
Okay. So for me, yeah,
well, when Klein comes in, though, doesn't wear the captain's armband, does he?
No, he doesn't, mate. How many people come off the bench and wear the captain's armband apart from Luca?
Fernandinho did it on the weekend.
Bloody spurt, mate.
Fernandinho did it on the weekend.
For us?
Not for us. Well, I mean, maybe he probably could have. I'd pick him as captain if he came along. I'd sign him. I'm probably going to just combine a couple of your last two topics, Rob, in terms of who would we like to see. Left back is a 100% certainty, because another question without notice, are we equipped for a COVID outbreak at Palace? If Tyreek Mitchell gets COVID, who plays? Jeff Shaw. Not even, we're not even talking injuries. We're talking something that could very easily happen. Yeah, you're looking at probably a Jeff Schlupp or someone to try and make that. If we lost four or five players to COVID, technically we still have to play the game because that's the Premier League's new thing. If you've got 13 outfield players and a goalkeeper, you have to play. So we would have 13 outfield players and a goalkeeper. So I think we need to look at, even if it's not a case of signing first team players, we got to look seriously at some of the depth in some of our positions and look at some of those kids that we've got coming through and go, right, can you step up? So, you know, if it came down to it, could someone like a Jezrak Saki step into an attacking role? Yeah.
Maybe we should get Odell Rackett back.
Rich on that words for you, Jay Rich Bagaloo.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I mean, that's the thing is, you know, could a Jay Rich Bagaloo step in? Is a Reece Hannum ready to step into a Premier League game? And he's got to have a, and I think we, you know, obviously I can't answer those questions, but I think Vieira has to have a look at those sorts of things and go, because it is a very real possibility these days. You don't have to worry about an injury crisis. You have to worry about a COVID outbreak where you don't lose one player, you lose five.
Yeah.
You know, if you lose 10, sure, you can postpone the game. But if you lose five, you've got to find, people to play. Yeah. And do we have that?
And you when you see the piss take that was Chelsea at the weekend,
yeah,
with six on the bench, was it, and two goalkeepers? Just, that annoyed me.
Right. I agree, a left back, but to your point, Ned, there, which is very, very pertinent, and especially what's going on now, anyone outside City, Liverpool, Chelsea, Man U, probably that's it, would struggle with a COVID outbreak with five players. I would say, at the moment in the Premier League. Those four could cope because they've got stupid squads and probably stupid under-23s as well available, but everyone else would. So we're not equipped for that, no, but I would say three-quarters of the Premier League aren't equipped for that either.
I don't think that means that we should just, you know, give up because the rest of the Premier League can't do it, though. I think there's a sort of position where perhaps you need to be looking at short-term contracts. You know, maybe getting someone in who might be 34, 35, at the late end of their career, they're not going to be, you know, your superstar starter every week. But just in those positions where we don't really have that cover, I think we just need to, the sorts of signings we should be looking at are those types of players. We're not going to sign a $25, $30 million striker. I mean, we know that. That's, you know, we don't need that. But I do think that we need to probably put a bit of time into identifying players that could fill that gap, that could fill those gaps if need be.
Agreed. All right. So we've been going on for a while. So this should get to Tony. This should get help Tony get halfway home now. So we're on the home stretch. Let's talk. So I'll just do the next three games because then after that's Millwall and then Brighton. So the next three, apparently, as we stand right now, Spurs away on Monday, Norwich at home Wednesday, West Ham home following Sunday, January the 2nd. How are we feeling there? I'm not going to start with Negri, who says nine, or start with Dale, who's realistic. What would you say from that? So Spurs away, Norwich at home, bearing in mind that's 2 days later, and West Ham at home. Don't look at Negri as a dickhead.
I am going to say 4 points.
Mm-hmm. Mark him up.
I'll say Dale's 4 and I'll raise you to 5 points. Beat Norwich, draw Spurs, draw West Ham.
I would say 4. I'll be happy with 4 as well. I mean, Dale's getting Ned because he's already said 9. So.
Nine.
I could make it even stupider, yes. I could say 8, which is mathematically impossible.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like
10 with the rugby bonus point thrown in.
It's always a pleasure, Ned, have you on this sometimes. All right. So as we come towards the final bit, let's talk everything Aussie with Ned and Marky Mark. Anything to report from Aussie land?
Ned, do you want to start? I tend to start. You can start, mate, if you want. You want to lord in your victorious bloody victory mob all huffing and puffing in the stands there with your hands in each other's back pockets and whatnot?
Yes, very much hashtag COVID safe. But no, it's just, and obviously Melbourne Derby, on Saturday night. Ended up finishing 2-2, so didn't quite get the result I was hoping for, but it was fantastic to just be back in a stadium full of fans and, you know, everyone singing and having a good old time. So they had the Victory M fully sold out. Everyone was up on their feet, which is really good after, you know, apparently the league at the moment is trying to re-engage with active fans and bring them back after a few years ago where they basically just tried to kill the league off by getting rid of all the active fans at one hit by just a whole heap of horrible over-policing and all sorts of craziness. It was obviously just a one-off game, but good to see it, you know, slowly starting to build. And hopefully we can sort of get back to sort of something where it was, you know, 5-10 years ago, where it was, you know, could actually get some pretty good atmospheres going, particularly some of the bigger games. It's probably my main one to talk about. I'll throw it back over to Mark. Probably doesn't necessarily want to talk so much about his team because they're not doing quite as well.
Nothing to talk about, mate, other than postponement of games, which is evidently all in the court of our opposition. Everything I'm reading up on is to do with the opposition, not us, with the players contracting COVID or problems with logistics, obviously travelling interstate and every state having different bloody protocol to get in and out of. So not much report on the local front. I know the girls are back into the Asian Cup in a month's time. Qualifiers, or the cup itself. I don't even know. But just a question while we're on all things Aussie and the Ashes being on here at the moment. Who do you go for, Ned, in the... Now, bat and ball.
Depends who's winning. At the moment, I'm as Aussie as they come. There might have been a couple of series in the past where perhaps I've been, you know, maybe favouring the English side. But at the moment, I'm all about Marnus Labuschagne, Steve Smith. Been huge fans of their work forever. Massive Australian cricket fan right about now. And if England suddenly managed to turn it around, they won't. But you know,
no, it's been good. Obviously, we've got to get Tony back from the UK with 15, 16 hours off pod. So here's a perfect time to open the floor for all things Ashes. We're waiting on pod for this.
I'm going to.
There we go. All right, aren't we?
I've watched 3 balls of the Ashes. I could not care any less. Like literally, I just don't watch cricket. I don't care. I watched 3 balls and. Nothing like I think all 3 were left by whoever was betting. I didn't even know if England were bowling or betting, so you can go nuts about the Ashes. Couldn't care less. If England lose 5-0, they lose 5-0. Means nothing to me. They win 5-0, they win 5-0. Also means nothing to me. So have at it, fellas.
I won't bang on about it. Obviously, that'd be
This is very pointed at me. We'll happily forward the message what I sent to my mate in the UK where I said, get on Australia to win 4-0 and Labuschagne top run scorer. And I'll just put it this way. The line I trope is when England gets smashed in the Ashes and Australia's cock-a-hoot and everyone's loving cricket, it makes participation easy and my job even easier. So come on, Australia. We're awful.
You're not much chop. I thought, look out, Braun Anderson back in. Here we go.
Mate, it's certain things have been hidden. Like Root's had, and I'm pretty sure I want to go because I don't want to talk about this, but I'll just say Root has had a great year. He scored a shitload of runs. It's brilliant. Everyone's gone on about how many runs he's scored, and it's like, yeah, but you forget no one else has played any Test cricket. So,
does Graham Gooch still play?
Shut up. Someone mute him. Like Labuschagne and Smith, who for me, I know Smith's having a rough trot, but Labuschagne's the best bat in the world, hands down, absolute country mile. He's magnificent. And if he'd played a number of Test matches this year, he probably would be number one. So let's not worry about that. Anderson, Broad, good bowlers, but Aussie decks, not for them. You guys come in with your fucking C grade. Bloody seam attack and just taught a lesson. So,
Michael Nessa, proud Queenslander, washing out there.
Mate, won't play again. in the nicest possible terms, won't play again. Bolland will probably play down at the MCG if they go horses for courses. And look, you're just too good for us, mate. I think we've won one test out of the last 14 in Australia.
Long may that continue.
I think the only day of test cricket I've seen England win in Australia was the Ashes we won down here, and I went to day one and day five in a little bot, which was about an hour long in Sydney. Otherwise, I don't think I've seen us win a session, let alone a test match.
Fair enough.
So,
I'd pick Nessa Hussain for next game.
Mate, do you know what? You say that and we laugh at you.
I don't know.
Probably wouldn't go much worse than fucking Hamid or...
Couldn't be worse.
I'm scraping the ball. Oh, Michael Atherton. How about him?
There you go. Get Bumbles back in while you're at it.
Robbie Burns, who I also reckon might be a Palace fan. He's from Croydon, so he might be a Palace fan. So maybe we cut him a bit of slack.
Who's that, Dar?
Robbie Burns.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I won't bang on about it either. You're very much
about how it's going,
but
you absolutely will bang on about it. So.
Yeah. Mate, for you mob that pride yourself on being a banter mob or whatever, very fucking quiet on the WhatsApp, I've got to say. I've just been drip feeding bits here and there, close of
what
play.
What am I going to say? What am I going to say?
Back and forth, mate. Really past glory. You know, 250 odd not out. How about that? You know, whatever. fucking just tumbleweeds, mate. Or quiet.
This is the festive Exiled Eagles podcast, and this is not the Ashes chat. Not that I care, but let's not go into Ashes chat. We can do the Ashes podcast straight after this, after Ned and Mark record their parenting podcast.
I thought we're doing the 14 and a half hours now for Tony.
Exactly. It's a tone. Tone.
No, I won't bang on about it. It's 2-0. I love it no end, and it's good to have you let out here. I've been to several days of test match cricket at the Gabba, Barmy Army, a bit of sing song. It's great. Nothing better.
Well, on that cheery note, all that's left to say is thank you very much, guys. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you all. I hope you have a great festive period. As I said before, please, if anyone does, because we don't know what's going to happen, if there is lockdowns or anyone feels lonely, please feel free to reach out to us on any channel, on Facebook, on Twitter, or anything like that. You just want to talk bollocks, we're more than happy to do so. Hopefully we get to watch some Palace over the next few days, a couple of weeks, who knows. And then also sending our best to Tony King, who has to fly home to the UK for reasons no one ever wants to. All the best, mate. Hope everything goes well there. And to James Howland as well, who has COVID. Hope the symptoms stay mild. So otherwise, fellas, thank you very much. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year, and up the Palace. And how good is it that Ned can't say anything right now?
Shut up, Rob. I got it back.
Wank. All right. Well, all that's left to say is Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, fellas. Ned has gone, which is good because I don't really want to wish him one. So that's perfect. It's worked out really well. Oh, no.
He's back.
Disaster.
Right on the cue.
Oh, awful. They're not connected to audio.
He's got the face of Aya going on, so.
Also, why is it 10 to midnight?
Midnight.
As I said, broken clocks twice a day, isn't it?
Yeah, well, she's not right at the moment.
His face is brilliant, isn't it?
What is this wizardry in front of me? Come on, Nettie, we're wishing you in, mate.
It's not connected into audio.
Sod it. All right, record it. Finish it. Start again.
So, okay.
Basically started going, your microphone doesn't, like, we don't recognize your microphone, use another one. I was like, well, it's the inbuilt microphone, so that's going to be a challenge. And then it was like, we don't recognize your speakers, and then it just wouldn't let me in, and then it put me in twice, but I couldn't see anything. And then it finally let me come back. So
is this your new laptop?
Yeah, it's going well. 1700 bucks well spent.
You gotta stop going to cash converters for these things, mate.
Cash converters.
If it's loved once, it'll be loved again.
I've said in Dale before, there's a big news in the Seltzer household to, like, just before we started. My 7-year-old asked, was he real?
Oh, how'd you play that?
Ned, tell us how you would play that one, Ned.
Yeah,
this will be good.